Hi, my name's Tor Parsons. I run a YouTube channel called Tor's Cabinet of Curiosities. This is an old episode of Tor's Cabinet that I never put on YouTube from back when it was a podcast. I never made this episode of the Tor's Cabinet of Curiosities podcast into an episode of the YouTube show because it's covering a topic that I feel like has been covered a lot by a lot of other YouTube channels, and this episode doesn't really add much to the conversation, but if you've never heard of the subject matter, then enjoy. This is The Many Mysteries of My Immortal. Since there has been fiction, and since there have been people to be fans of it, there has been fan fiction. Myths and legends were told around prehistoric campfires not from the canonical work of individual recognized storytellers, but from someone's memory of a story they heard long ago, with the teller knowingly adding their own twist. Background characters in one person's story became front and center in someone else's, years later, over on the other side of the mountain. In this way, entire mythologies were constructed. Consider how the myths of old, from Gilgamesh to the Greek gods to the Gospels, include shared themes, shared characters, and shared settings, but no two tellings of the story are exactly the same. Each teller adds what they want and cuts what they don't want. Stories were elastic. Everyone was the author. In a way, the process of making fanfiction is the natural order of human storytelling. Today's strictly codified stories, traceable back to an individual author with the power to decide what is and isn't canon, are a recent invention, and humans have been around for far longer before that invention than since then. Fanfiction, as we know it today, began when the novel began, in the West at least, with the Enlightenment. As intellectuals across Europe devoured works like Paradise Lost and Gulliver's Travels, they found themselves thinking many things that 14-year-old girls thought much later about the bestsellers of their day. What if I was in this story myself? What was happening to this minor character while the rest of the story was going on? What if these two characters had sex? Some people who are remembered today as great authors wrote things that are truly best described as fanfics of work by other authors in their era. In the 18th century, Gulliver's Travels was sort of the Harry Potter of its time in terms of the many fanfics it inspired, including a set of poems by none other than Alexander Pope, the second most quoted author in the Oxford Dictionary of Quotations, behind only Shakespeare. In a concept staggeringly similar to many of today's fanfics, Pope's series, Poems Suggested by Gulliver, takes place from the perspective of a minor unseen character in Gulliver's Travels, Gulliver's wife Mary, depicting her side of the story, as she resents Gulliver for being away from home so long. Henry Fielding, sometimes called the father of the English novel, wrote not one but two fanfics of one particular book, Pamela, or Virtue Rewarded, by Samuel Richardson. Pamela was about a young woman who remained chaste and innocent in the face of men seeking her hand in marriage, and the book's puritanical morals so disgusted Fielding that he wrote an entire novel in response, Shamela, in which Pamela not only bangs nearly every male character in the narrative, she is determinedly in charge of who she bangs and ends up successfully seducing the squire in order to take control of his estate. A true girl boss. The next year, Fielding wrote Joseph Andrews, a novel ostensibly about Pamela's brother that was really a thinly veiled gender-swapped version of the original Pamela novel. Gender-swapped fics, as well as fics that play up both sex and feminism, especially when they're not present in the original work, are mainstays of modern-day fanfiction. Specifically, a fic that emphasizes the failings of the source material is known as a spite fic, so it's all the more amazing to encounter them trope for trope in the 1740s. In the following centuries, fanfiction declined in prestige, increased in quantity, and I would argue stayed flat in terms of quality. There's a lot more bad fanfiction today, but there's also a lot more good fanfiction. The first modern-day fandom, in which many different people all wrote and shared fanfiction of a particular series, might have grown up around Sherlock Holmes in the 1890s. The Sherlock Holmes fandom, organized in fan societies, some of which were invitation-only, pioneered the concept of fanon, that there can be things the fandom agrees on that aren't canonically part of the source material. It was from the early Sherlock fandom's so-called Great Game, in which fans tried to tie up inconsistencies in Conan Doyle's stories and depict Holmes and Watson as real people, that we get things like John Watson's middle name being Hamish, something that appears in nearly every adaptation of the stories today, but was never touched upon by Conan Doyle. Many prominent authors wrote Sherlock Holmes fanfics, including J.M. Barrie, the author of Peter Pan, and by the time Arthur Conan Doyle retired Sherlock after 40 years in 1927, Sherlock fanfiction stories already outnumbered his canonical stories. Fanfiction was really brought to the masses in the 1960s, driven by the Star Trek fandom in America and manga fandoms in Japan. By then, average people had ways to get their writings to fellow fans, and mimeographed Star Trek fanzines, often containing fanfiction, were sent out to mailing lists of people who met at fan conventions. On the other side of the Pacific, the doujinshi phenomenon was gaining popularity in Japan, in which people would write their own manga starring their favorite characters and self-publish them with cheap copying machinery. It was during these years that the term fanfiction itself was coined for what was already an age-old phenomenon, and other common fandom terms came into use, originally in Star Trek zines, OCs for original characters, characters not present in the source material invented by fanfic authors, Mary Sue for an unrealistically perfect OC, and probably the best-known one, ships, for romantic and or sexual relationships between characters who don't get together in the source material. The internet was just around the corner, and given that most of the early fanfic authors were tech-minded nerds, some of the first real online communities surrounded fanfiction. As early as the mid-1980s, Usenet newsgroups, a precursor of online discussion forums, were being used by computer-savvy fans to share their fics. They were among the first non-professional users of what became the internet. In the mid-90s, when the World Wide Web was launched and computer use expanded, fanfiction writing exploded, also buoyed by the popularity of new sci-fi and fantasy media releasing around then, especially Harry Potter. And now we find ourselves in a golden age of fanfiction. The largest fanfiction site on the internet, Archive of Our Own, or AO3, comprises 2.5 million active writers. Fanfiction is a multi-billion dollar industry. Best-selling novels like the Mortal Instruments series by Cassandra Clare and 50 Shades of Grey by E.L. James began as Harry Potter and Twilight fanfiction, respectively. And whatever you may rightfully say about Cassandra Clare or 50 Shades, it's clear the popular prestige of fanfiction has come full circle since the days of Alexander Pope writing about Gulliver's Travels as well. Other better authors also got their beginning writing fanfic. Andy Weir, the author of The Martian, initially wrote in the Sherlock Holmes fandom, probably the longest-lasting fandom and the most fanficked property in existence, while Neil Gaiman did the same. Some authors have even gone the opposite way. S.E. Hinton, the legendary author of The Outsiders, can now be found in her old age writing supernatural fanfic. The philosopher Eliezer Yudkowsky has used Harry Potter fanfic to communicate complex ideas. AO3 won a Hugo Award in 2019 for Best Related Work, usually otherwise given to works of nonfiction about the writing scene, and academia is becoming interested in exploring what the soaring popularity of fanfiction means. Today, you can find PhD dissertations arguing that the rise in fanfic writing is a revolutionary act, taking back control of storytelling from an increasingly corporate and centralized media industry. Those who aren't keen on fanfiction instead argue the exact opposite, that writing fanfic shows you're a shill of corporate media properties, an argument I've never quite understood. I think fanfic is one of the few creative mediums that exists definitively outside the capitalist system. Now, I'm not a leftist, personally, and I don't often use the phrase capitalist system, but objectively, the capitalist system is a thing that exists, and movies, TV, traditionally published novels, music released by record labels, anything you can stream, those are all part of it. Fanfiction isn't, unless you go the E.L. James route and publish your fic with the names changed. Fanfiction is usually written purely for the joy of writing and distributed for free online. And there's a strong sense of collective ownership in the writing of fanfic, a notion that these characters and settings don't belong to media conglomerates, they belong to us, the fans, seizing the means of story production. It's hard to imagine a medium that's less capitalist. Others say that fanfic authors act as middlemen between fans and the distant creators of the books and shows they love. They create stories with your favorite characters in your favorite settings, just like the actual creators of the original property, but they're also accessible enough online that you can think of them as people. But as fanfiction has its day in the sun, one fic still stands head and shoulders above the rest. It didn't sell 100 million copies like 50 Shades of Grey, but it may be the most read fanfiction on the internet. It didn't receive a positive review in The New Yorker like Eliezer Yudkowsky's Harry Potter and the Methods of Rationality did, but it may be the most acclaimed fanfiction on the internet. This fic is as quotable as Hamlet, To anyone who occupies a place anywhere on the Venn diagram of people who are into fanfic and people who were kids in the 2000s. Some fanfic authors say it gives the entire world of fanfiction a bad name. Others contest this, saying nobody truly believes all fanfiction is like that. It's been called the closest thing there is to a written version of The Room, and its origins are every bit as much a mystery. This is the story of My Immortal. Content warning, this episode includes occasional references to self-harm and sexual abuse in very tasteless contexts by people who have clearly never experienced either. There will be no more warnings beyond this point. As they say in the fanfic world, dead dove, do not eat. On March 3rd, 2006, the first chapter of a Harry Potter fanfiction was posted to fanfiction.net, a site usually considered a home for amateurs by fanfic connoisseurs. The title was My Immortal, presumably after the song by Evanescence, and the author went by the username xxxbloodywrists666xxx. The first chapter read as follows, and if you're between the ages of 18 and 30, and or a Harry Potter fan, and or have ever written fanfic, or have ever been around people who write fanfic, this is going to sound as familiar as the Bill of Rights or the I Have a Dream speech.
Hi. My name is Ebony Darkness Dementia Ravenway, and I have long ebony black hair. That's how I got my name, with purple streaks and red tips that reaches my mid-back and icy blue eyes like limpid tears. And a lot of people tell me I look like Amy Lee. And if you don't know who that is, get the hell out of here. I'm not related to Gerard Way, but I wish I was because he's a major f***ing hottie. I'm a vampire, but my teeth are straight and white. I have pale white skin. I'm also a witch, and I go to a magic school called Hogwarts in England, where I'm in the 7th year. I'm 17. I'm a goth, in case you couldn't tell, and I wear mostly black. I love Hot Topic, and I buy all my clothes from there. For example, today I was wearing a black corset with matching lace around it and a black leather miniskirt, pink fishnets, and black combat boots. I was wearing black lipstick, white foundation, black eyeliner, and red eyeshadow. I was walking outside Hogwarts. It was snowing and raining, so there was no sun, which I was very happy about. A lot of preps stared at me. I put up my middle finger at them.
I would conservatively estimate that 20% of American millennials know that whole passage by heart. It continued like that for a total of 44 chapters, posted throughout most of 2006 and into 2007. The fic takes place at a nearly unrecognizable version of Hogwarts, in a world that seems to be divided into three castes. Goths, usually written as goths with two Fs, posers, who think they're goths but aren't, and worst of all, preps, who aren't goths and don't even want to be goths. The plot, if there is one, largely consists of the main character, Ebony Darkness Dementia Ravenway, dating Draco Malfoy on and off, going to see American emo bands like My Chemical Romance and Good Charlotte at concerts in Hogsmeade, elaborately describing her outfits, engaging in recreational wrist-cutting, and occasionally fighting off Voldemort, who inexplicably speaks in Shakespearean-sounding English and uses guns instead of magic. All the main characters are gothified. My Immortal's version of Harry Potter prefers to go by Vampire Potter, and Hermione now wants to be called Bloody Mary Smith. Every single one of them acts absurdly out of character. I think the third and fourth chapters of My Immortal provide the perfect snapshot of how much of a delicious catastrophe this fic is.
On the night of the concert, I put on my black lace-up boots with high heels. Underneath them were ripped red fishnets. Then I put on a black leather mini dress with all this corset stuff on the back and front. I put on matching fishnet on my arms. I straightened my hair and made it look all spiky. I felt a little depressed then, so I slit one of my wrists. I read a depressing book while I waited for it to stop bleeding, and I listened to some GC. I painted my nails black and put on tons of black eyeliner. Then I put on some black lipstick. I didn't put on foundation because I was pale anyway. I drank some human blood, so I was ready to go to the concert. I went outside. Draco was waiting there in front of his flying car. He was wearing a Simple Plan t-shirt, they would play at the show too, baggy black skater pants, black nail polish, and a little eyeliner. And a lot faux cool boys wear it, okay? Hi, Draco, I said in a depressed voice.
Hi, Ebony,
he said back. We walked into his flying black Mercedes-Benz, the license plate said 666, and flew to the place with the concert. On the way, we listened excitedly to Good Charlotte and Marilyn Manson. We both smoked cigarettes and drugs. When we got there, we both hopped out of the car.
We went to the mosh pit at the front of the stage and jumped up and down as we listened to Good Charlotte.
Joel is so hot, I said to Draco, pointing to him as he sung, filling the club with his amazing voice.
Suddenly Draco looked sad.
What's wrong?
I asked as we moshed to the music. Then I caught on.
Hey, it's okay. I don't like him better than you, I said.
Really?
Asked Draco sensitively, and he put his arm around me, all protective.
Really, I said. Besides, I don't even know Joel, and he's going out with Hillary Duff. I hate that little b-, I said disgustedly, thinking of her ugly blonde face.
The night went on really well, and I had a great time. So did Draco. After the concert, we drank some beer and asked Benji and Joel for their autographs and photos with them. We got GC concert tees. Draco and I crawled back into the Mercedes-Benz, but Draco didn't go back into Hogwarts. Instead, he drove the car into the Forbidden Forest.
Dun-dun-dun. Chapter 4.
Draco, I shouted. What the f*** do you think you're doing?
Draco didn't answer, but he stopped the flying car and he walked out of it. I walked out of it too, curiously.
What the f*** hell? I asked angrily.
Ebony, he asked.
What? I snapped.
Draco leaned in extra close and I looked into his gothic red eyes. He was wearing color contacts, which revealed so much depressing sorrow and evilness, and then suddenly I didn't feel mad anymore. And then, suddenly, just as I, Draco kissed me passionately. Draco climbed on top of me, and we started to make out keenly against a tree. He took of my top, and I took of his clothes. I even took of my bra. Then he put his thingy into my you-know-what, and we did it for the first time.
Oh, 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 I screamed. We started to kiss everywhere, and my pale body became all warm. And then...
What the hell are you doing, you motherfuckers?
It was Dumbledore.
Yes, that's right. Dumbledore. Wise Albus Dumbledore screams, "What the hell are you doing, you motherfuckers?" at Ebony and Draco, which is so out of character, I have a hard time coming up with a clearer example to compare it to. Dumbledore screaming, "What the hell are you doing, you motherfuckers?" is literally the Exhibit A textbook example of a well-known character doing something they would never do. A few chapters on, Ebony goes through the first of many, many breakups with Draco, setting up perhaps the only consistent element of the plot, the love triangle between Ebony, Draco, and Harry Vampire Potter. Sometimes Ebony dates Draco, sometimes Draco and Vampire date each other, because, like all the male characters in My Immortal, they're bi. Soon after Ebony and Draco's first breakup, Voldemort enters the story, and I gotta give the author credit for this, he's trying to kill Harry Potter, like he does in canon. He does, however, respect Harry's name change to Vampire. He may want to kill Harry, but at least he doesn't dead name him. Here's chapter 9, after the breakup.
I was so mad and sad, I couldn't believe Draco for cheating on me. I began to cry against the tree where I did it with Draco. Then, all of a suddenly, an horrible man with red eyes and no nose and everything started flying towards me on a broomstick. He didn't have a nose, basically like Voldemort in the movie, and he was wearing all black, but it was obvious he wasn't gothic. It was Voldemort. No, I shouted in a scared voice, but then Voldemort shouted Imperius and I couldn't run away. Crookshanks, I shouted at him. Voldemort fell off his broom and started to scream. I felt bad for him, even though I'm a sadist, so I stopped.
Ebony, he yelled, thou must kill Vampire Potter.
I thought about Vampire and his sexa eyes and his gothic black hair and how his face looks just like Joel Madden. I remember that Draco had said I didn't understand, so I thought, what if Draco went out with Vampire before I went out with him and they broke up? No, Voldemort, I shouted back. Voldemort gave me a gun. No, please, I begged.
Thou must, he yelled. If thou dost not, then I shall kill thy beloved Draco.
How did you know? I asked in a surprised way. Voldemort got a dude you're so f***ed look on his face.
I hath telekinesis,
he answered cruelly.
And if you doth not kill Vampire, then thou know what will happen to Draco,
he shouted. Then he flew away,
angrily on his broomstick.
Characterization is not the only thing my immortal gets wrong. Oh, no, no, no. The writing contains so many spelling and grammatical errors that parts of it are nearly unreadable. The author, who claimed her name was Tara Gillespie, initially said that her friend Raven was helping her, quote, "whiff da story and spelling." But after she seemed to have a very public falling out with Raven halfway through writing the fic, both the story and the spelling, already quite terrible, took a noticeable dive. As universally known as My Immortal is in fandom circles, I have never met anyone who can summarize exactly what happens in the back half of My Immortal. Ebony, by this point sometimes referred to as Enobi or Ebobi, goes back in time with the help of Marty McFly from Back to the Future. She meets Tom Riddle, who wants to be known as Satan, or might actually be Satan. Hedwig, Harry's owl, comes into the story, except Hedwig in My Immortal is clearly described as a person, and the only connection My Immortal's character Hedwig seems to have to the owl is that both of them are named Hedwig. Timelines get crossed until it's impossible to tell what is happening when. At one point, the story does a loop-de-loop, with one chapter leading directly into a duplicate of the previous chapter. For reasons literally nobody can explain, finding a four-letter synonym for dirt becomes an important part of the plot, and it's seen as a question only Ebony can answer. She offers up sand. Nobody ever says the word soil. The 39th chapter is written by someone else, who claims to have hacked Tara's fanfiction.net account, mercilessly mocking her before Tara somehow regains control over her account and posts the remaining chapters. The 44th and final chapter surrounds a rallying of the forces. Snape steals Draco's flying car, then all the characters you've met throughout the entire story converge on the spot for various reasons, and Ebony has to save them all from Voldemort. The final line of the story is Ebony yelling, "Abracadabra!" Which is obviously not a real spell in the Harry Potter universe. Even as the fic was still updating, a cult following began to surround My Immortal for reasons that by now are, I hope, easy to grasp. Sure, a lot of fanfiction is bad, but it's rarely this entertainingly bad. The malapropisms, the bafflingly incorrect characterizations, and the patently ridiculous quote-unquote gothic atmosphere gave My Immortal a spot in Harry Potter lore that endures to this day. It inspired fanfics of its own. T-shirts that said, "What the hell are you doing, you motherfuckers?" and "I hath telekinesis," and even an excellent web series with a substantial budget, though it didn't even try to adapt the whole winding storyline and instead just ran with the general premise of Hogwarts but everyone is a 2000s mall goth. There are massive amounts of My Immortal fan art, a spectacular video by the YouTuber Strange Eons in which she meticulously recreates all the outfits Tara describes Ebony wearing, and many, many dramatic readings. So, now I can finally introduce the first of My Immortal's many mysteries. Is it real? That is, did Tara Gillespie seriously believe she was writing decent Harry Potter fanfic? Or is it a viciously smart satire, a spitefic of the entire Harry Potter fanfiction world, incorporating every possible trope of bad fanfic? To this day, that is a matter of roiling debate. There's a little more of a consensus now that it's fake, but I'd still say that only about two-thirds of the fandom think so. There's still a fairly substantial and devoted online community that believes My Immortal was the real deal. People often defend thinking My Immortal wasn't a satire by posting their own Harry Potter or Twilight fanfic from around that time, saying that if you had been part of that subculture, then and there writing angsty tween fanfiction in 2006, you would also have recognized that this is really what that zeitgeist was like. They say, "We wrote things like My Immortal that we were serious about, so why can't My Immortal itself be serious?" And while I respect that, because I wasn't a member of that community at the time, I think it's time to take out your magnifying glasses, sleuths, because there are a few pieces of circumstantial evidence that point strongly in the direction of it being a satire. Like the great Jenny Nicholson, I have put them into a numbered list. 1. The shoehorning of every possible Harry Potter fanfic trope into the story, and just things that people in general, especially people from outside the fanfic world, associate with all fanfiction. We have anatomically improbable sex scenes, check. Self-insert protagonist, check. Some of the characters in My Immortal accidentally refer to Ebony as Tara sometimes. Absurdly long physical descriptions of the narrator and other characters, especially what they're wearing. Check. Title that comes from a popular song and doesn't have much to do with the content of the story. Check. The characters from the source material are portrayed in obscenely out-of-character ways. Check. The author's personal struggles very clearly seep into the story itself. Check. It has a love triangle. Check. Someone hacks the author's account once. Check. And in terms of Harry Potter fanfiction tropes especially, it ships Dreary, Draco and Harry, arguably the most common ship in all of fanfiction, although Harry is admittedly known as vampire in this case. Check. It also ships the self-insert main character with Draco, which was also quite common in the early days because a lot of quote-unquote edgy middle school girls were horny for Draco. Check. It inexplicably introduces crossover characters from other fictional properties, in My Immortals' case, Back to the Future. Check. And lastly, it Americanizes Harry Potter's British setting, with exceedingly out-of-place references to fashion brands and emo bands that weren't that big in the UK when it was written. Check. Ebony's favorite store, Hot Topic, never had any locations outside the US and Canada. But just that the story has every bad fanfic trope isn't irrevocable proof because, after all, those tropes had to have come from somewhere. The point of all those tropes is that they were overused. So clearly, their appearance in this fanfic can't be a sign on its own that it was fake. So let's move on to two! The way the story gets weirder as it goes on. As I've previously discussed, My Immortal goes from having a thin but generally followable plot into being a full-on acid trip by the 20th chapter or so. There's an in-universe explanation for this. Tara Gillespie was leaning on her friend Raven to keep her story followable, and once she broke things off with Raven, My Immortal suffered the consequences. But there's no clear point at which the quality of My Immortal drops. Rather, it seems to just get more incoherent gradually, incrementally, chapter by chapter. This looks to me like an example of the pop culture phenomenon of flanderization. Once a creator begins to be praised for something specific, they'll assume that specific thing is all the fans want. The original example of flanderization is how Ned Flanders in The Simpsons became more and more of an evangelical Christian stereotype as the show went on. Originally, he was supposed to just be the Simpsons' goody-goody neighbor, who was the opposite of Homer in every possible way, including but not limited to being a devout Christian. But when fans began to praise the writers of The Simpsons for all the jokes about Flanders' faith, the writers responded by making Flanders' faith become his entire personality, overtaking everything else they'd previously established about him. They assumed that fans would like this. After all, they liked all the previous jokes about him being an evangelical, but instead it ended up turning him into a one-joke character who people got tired of. In the case of My Immortal, if you take it as a satire, the decline in the story's legibility makes sense as an example of flanderization. Noticing that people thought all the misspellings and the incoherency of the narrative were among the funniest parts of the fic, the author responded by making the later chapters so misspelled and so incoherent that they weren't really funny anymore. At least that's what I think. 3. The malapropisms. Tara constantly refers to things with the wrong words, not just misspelled ones, and some of these words are suspect, to say the least. Draco is sometimes quote-unquote accidentally referred to as Dracula. Sirius Black once gets called Socrates. Cornelius Fudge, the Minister of Magic, is repeatedly dubbed Cornelia F***, which is funny, but also suspiciously close to Cornelia Funke, the author of Inkheart, a fantasy novel that was pretty popular among Harry Potter fans in the 2000s. In one of the biggest smoking guns, I think, the magical prison Azkaban is referred to as Azerbaijan, which is actually a small post-Soviet country in the Middle East. Now, it's easy to dismiss all of these as the work of a hyperactive autocorrect on Tara's computer. Tara misspells something badly enough, and the computer can't recognize what she's trying to say, autocorrecting it to something completely different. But if you read through any sample paragraph at all in My Immortal, it's clear she isn't writing with autocorrect on at all. One in every 5 or so words early on, and probably 2 out of every 3 words by the last few chapters, are misspelled, usually in very common, obvious ways. A spell checker that can autocorrect Azkaban to Azerbaijan would definitely be able to catch those errors, so Tara can't have been using one. So what you're left with is that Tara can't spell her main character's own name, but she can spell Azerbaijan and Socrates. Unlikely. There's another malapropism in the story that the fandom puts a lot of weight on. Many people point to this particular mistake as the clearest piece of evidence toward My Immortal being a satire. In the 31st chapter, only once, Tom Riddle is referred to as Tom Bombadil. Now, the real Tom Bombadil is a weird minor character in The Lord of the Rings. Tom Bombadil doesn't really fit into the overarching story, it's never explained who or what he is, and within the world of The Lord of the Rings, even Gandalf canonically isn't sure what the deal is with Bombadil. Tom Bombadil has never appeared in any of the film adaptations of Lord of the Rings. Returning to My Immortal, in an author's note early on in the fic, Tara claims that she has not read the Harry Potter books and has only seen the movies. Given that she's writing in 2006, this would mean she's only watched up to the fourth movie, since the fifth one came out in 2007, after My Immortal had already finished. Tara's nearly illiterate writing style backs this up. Of course she hasn't read any books. But then, if so, how do you explain the reference to Tom Bombadil? And Lord of the Rings is, of course, at a much higher reading level than Harry Potter. If Tara hasn't read the Harry Potter books, there's no way she's read Lord of the Rings. And yet, she calls Tom Riddle Tom Bombadil once, a typo that would be nearly impossible to make accidentally. What's more, in the next chapter, she includes an author's note apologizing for the mistake, once again bringing attention to it. I think the Tom Bombadil reference was meant as a deliberate wink and nod to readers, as if to say, yes, this is a satire. 4. My Immortal has a precursor. Listen to this. 15-year-old Eternity Dementia Johnson warily took a seat on the Hogwarts Express. As she did so, she heard many giggles in the air. Ugh. Stupid preps. Eternity had hoped she wouldn't see any when she came to Hogwarts. They had made her life in Los Angeles High School miserable. Now she was supposed to put up with them here. She sighed sadly and stared out of the window. In her misery, she took her iPod out of her Emily the Strange bag and blared on some My Chemical Romance. And don't they rock? Oh, great. Now even more preps were giving her dirty looks. Eternity tried her best to ignore them. It wasn't because Eternity was dirty or deformed or anything. Maybe it was something to do with her black leather corset, or her ripped black miniskirt, or her black combat boots, or the metal music she was listening to. Eternity hated how people judged her just like that because she was a goth. She was beautiful, with long raven black hair with red streaks, deathly pale ivory skin, and piercing blue eyes that would make any goth man's heart beat like a subway train. She was skinny, but had curves in the right places, but her eyes still bore the sadness of the scars of her tragic past. Anyway, Eternity saw someone trying to sit down next to her. She jumped to her feet. "Get the f*** out of here, you f***ing bastard," she shouted. "What's wrong?" asked the person. Suddenly, Eternity felt calmed down. The person had a very low, sexy voice. Okay, wait.
"What's wrong?" asked the person.
"Oh, I'm sorry," Eternity apologized.
"It's all right. Now, can I at least f- sit here?" asked the boy.
"Fine," said Eternity. The boy sat down. Eternity looked at his face. He was extremely hot. He had long dyed black hair and blue eyes. "What's your name?" asked Eternity.
"Draco," he said.
"That's an unusual name, but I guess I can't f***ing talk. My name's Eternity," said Eternity.
"Cool,"
said Draco. Draco and Eternity shook hands. "How old are you?" Eternity wanted to know.
15. How about you?" asked Draco.
"Same." Then the train stopped, and Draco and Eternity had to separate.
This sounds a lot like My Immortal, right? I mean, a lot like My Immortal. This fic is called I'm Not Okay, after the My Chemical Romance song, of course, and it was posted by the fanfiction.net account BloodyTears666. A month before My Immortal was first posted. Now, this isn't some shocking coincidence. I'm Not Okay definitely has a connection to My Immortal. In Tara Gillespie's author's note at the beginning of My Immortal, she said that BloodyTears666 was her friend Raven's fanfiction.net account. And if you look at the comments on I'm Not Okay, you begin to see where My Immortal could have come from. I'm Not Okay is basically My Immortal with better spelling and grammar, and because it wasn't so ludicrously bad, it didn't get as much so bad it's good attention as My Immortal later would, but most of the commenters reading it at the time accepted it as an obvious satire. It got several comments saying that while it was entertaining, it had to be more disjointed, with more misspellings, to really read as a deadpan satire of Harry Potter fanfiction. It's not hard to picture whoever wrote I'm Not Okay being disappointed that people had seen right through their Harry Potter fanfic satire, and taking the commenters' recommendations about making it less legible to heart. They proceed to create another fanfiction.net account. They manage to connect it to their previous fake account by claiming the owner of this account is the friend of the owner of the other account. Looking at I'm Not Okay and My Immortal together, a clear origin story for My Immortal as a satire comes together. Whether My Immortal is a satire or not matters surprisingly little to most fans. Yes, nearly everyone in the fanfiction community has a strong opinion one way or the other, but most people agree that it's still funny even if it is a satire, and the bigger mystery around My Immortal, who wrote it, is still every bit as intriguing. As possibly the most famous fanfic in existence, as well as one of the most read anonymous literary works in history, you know, apart from like folktales and mythology, there have been many, many false confessions to having written My Immortal. Every social media network has several different accounts expressing a general interest in Harry Potter and goth fashion and claiming to be the one true Tara Gillespie. The first and most pervasive theory about Tara's identity is that she lived in Dubai during the writing of My Immortal, which should raise some questions not just about who Tara really is, but about how good fanfiction authors really are at investigating mysteries, because this theory is based on extremely shaky premises. Tara says in her final author's note on her final chapter that she's, quote, leaving Dubya pretty soon. Fans believe that Dubya is a misspelling of Dubai, and a whole elaborate theorized narrative, sort of a meta fanfiction, has risen among the people who still believe My Immortal isn't a satire around the idea of Tara being the bored teenage daughter of a family of rich American expats living in Dubai. And I think this is ridiculous. Humoring the My Immortal is the real deal crowd for a second and assuming it's not a satire, there's no evidence in the rest of the fic that Tara has any awareness of the world beyond America, other than that one random reference to Azerbaijan. Ebony shops at Hot Topic, which once again has no locations outside North America. The fic doesn't once include anything relating to Islam or Middle Eastern culture, which would be hard to avoid if you lived in Dubai. And Tara includes passing references to several friends of hers who sound equally American. Not just Raven, but also a seldom referenced boyfriend, Justin. And there are so many things Dubya could be referring to that would make more sense for an American teenager to say than Dubai. I think whether or not My Immortal is a satire, that Dubya is meant to be a school. When I see the word Dubya, I think of it as an abbreviation of the letter W. You know, George W. Bush used to be called Dubya. Same thing. I think Dubya is meant to refer to a school with W in its name. Something like, say, Washington Middle School. WMS, where the students call it Dubya. That's a lot more plausible than suggesting Tara lives in Dubai. And it's worth noting that the largest high school in New Haven, Connecticut is called Wilbur Cross High School. Why am I bringing up New Haven, Connecticut? All in good time. First, give a listen to this clip.
Okay, let's go. Hey guys, I'm Tara. And I'm Raven. You're Acid Bath, Princess of the Darkness, and we're here today in Tara's room. We're going to pour out our souls in a little bit. You may notice that in our last videos, we had this really cool kid named Azer. He was the mime of Satan's bidding.
I'm not sure if being the mime of Satan's bidding is supposed to be a good thing or not to these girls.
You know why? You want to know why? Well, Tara and I were at the mall, and we were in Hollister. And we saw him there. He was at Hollister, and if you're at Hollister, that means you're a prep. And we were at Hot Topic, and the Hot Topic is, you know, it's right in front of, it's right like across the street from Hollister. So of course we saw him. Yeah, we were at Hot Topic, being really goth and stuff. And then we just saw Azer walking to Hollister, and we were just like, "Whoa, what's going on?" You know.
This sounds like a My Immortal fan video, right? Two girls named Tara and Raven talking about Hot Topic, being goth, and calling people preps, especially given that later on Tara and Raven lip sync to Welcome to the Black Parade by My Chemical Romance. The YouTube account that posted it is called XXBloodyKissXX, which is really, really similar to Tara and Raven's fanfiction.net usernames, and the other videos on the account show Tara and Raven lip syncing to other songs by bands referenced in My Immortal, like Simple Plan, Evanescence, and Good Charlotte. When this account was discovered in 2011, 2 years after it had posted its last video at the time, My Immortal fans thought they had reached their big break. These two were obviously making fun of goth culture in very similar ways to My Immortal. And of course, their names were Tara and Raven. That couldn't possibly be a coincidence. Tara and Raven Acid Bath, the people slash personas behind the XXBloodyKissXX YouTube account, were considered the prime suspects for having written My Immortal until 2014, when the WNYC radio program tracked them down and interviewed them. they revealed that, sure enough, they weren't being serious. They were sisters whose real names were Sarah and Rachel. They lived in New Haven, Connecticut, and they had never heard of My Immortal. And they weren't all that fired up about being named as the potential authors of My Immortal either. They didn't admit to it, but they also didn't try to vigorously deny it. Rachel, who played Raven in the videos, told WNYC, "Sarah and I know that we weren't responsible for the worst fanfiction ever written. Other than that, it doesn't matter." Some people took this at face value. It's not hard to see where they got the pseudonyms Tara and Raven, given that their real names, Sarah and Rachel, are very similar, just less goth. Nonetheless, many people think the coincidences are too strong to be ignored, and that denying they wrote My Immortal is just another part of Sarah and Rachel's act. To a substantial part of the fanfiction writing world, they are still the most prominent suspects. In the year of our Lord 2017, in the month of August, two separate things happened that blew the search for Tara Gillespie wide open, for a little while at least. First, the fiction press account XXXBloodyBlackTears666XXX, which predated My Immortal and was long thought to have a connection to Tara, updated for the first time in over a decade. The person behind the account asserted that she was Tara, My Immortal had been a satire, and that she was still writing, but she had lost the login credentials for the original account that wrote My Immortal. This confession held more weight than most of the other previous ones, since it came from someone who had clearly at least been around in the My Immortal days of fanfic writing, and the fandom was placed on high alert. Then, just a few weeks later, something else totally unexpected happened. The top spot on the New York Times Young Adult Bestseller list was occupied by a fantasy novel called Handbook for Mortals, by an author called Lanny Sarum, previously known only as the manager for the band Blues Traveler. Almost immediately, Handbook for Mortals attracted the wrong sort of attention from the publishing world because a lot of things about it didn't sit right. It was a debut novel by an unknown author there hadn't been any buzz about, published by a vanity press that had been founded just a month before, and yet it had apparently sold over 18,000 copies in the first day it had been released. Other YA authors smelled a rat. Soon, bookstore managers across the country were chiming in on social media, noting that they had gotten bulk orders for hundreds of copies of Handbook for Mortals. Within hours, a massive fraud scheme put into place by Handbook for Mortals' publisher came into view. Lanny Sarum herself denied culpability. The members of Blues Traveler countered that they had fired her because she had a penchant for illegal promotion schemes like these. And Handbook for Mortals was removed from the bestseller list after 23 hours, the shortest a book has ever topped the list. Handbook for Mortals, the book that cheated its way to the top of the charts, is an interesting story in its own right, but what, apart from the title, does it have to do with My Immortal? Well, people in the writing world, their curiosity piqued by the whole Handbook for Mortals affair, began to claim that Handbook for Mortals had a lot of parallels to My Immortal. It really doesn't at all. I actually read Handbook for Mortals to do research for this episode way back when I wrote this episode in 2021. Basically, everything the media was saying about the actual content of the book was wrong. It's about a young woman trying to make it as an acrobat in Las Vegas. The band The Plain White Tees and the comedian Carrot Top appear as characters. Nothing about it has any connection to the goth subculture, to emo bands, to Harry Potter, or even to fantasy at all, despite the title. It's also not that bad, and I think it could have been a genuine success if marketed in a normal way. But for some reason, someone unleashed a brainworm onto the internet that Handbook for Mortals basically reads as My Immortal 2, and the media uncritically began reporting that. Soon, speculation was rampant that the author of My Immortal had been unmasked as Lanny Sarum. This is when the mysterious XXXBloodyBlackTears666XXX account came back into the story. The person on that account, still claiming to have written My Immortal, said that she was not Lanny Sarum, and to debunk the Lanny Sarum rumors once and for all, she said that her real name could be found on her Tumblr account, which was not linked. Now this was a nuclear bomb. There are few things that go together better than Tumblr and My Immortal. Soon, Tumblr was on fire with people searching for the true author of My Immortal. The idea that the author of My Immortal had been among them all along was so compelling, nobody ever stopped to consider if they should trust this person. Thousands of accounts were questioned and said they had nothing to do with My Immortal. Finally, several false confessions later, Tumblr user Pipistrella discovered an account called Rose Christo that claimed to have written My Immortal back in March of 2017. In addition, to including screenshots of her logging into the XXXBloodyBlackTears666XXX fiction press account. This was her. It had to be. The full story came tumbling out in the following days. Rose Christo was a 27-year-old Native American woman with several self-published YA novels to her name and a traditionally published memoir planned to be released the following year. She had spent most of her childhood going from foster home to foster home, estranged from her younger brother. In her teen years, she claimed, she and a friend nicknamed Raven had written My Immortal as a spite fic, incorporating several inside jokes she had with her brother, in hope that it would allow her brother to find her and reconnect with her. In order to prove her authenticity, she gave the publisher of her forthcoming memoir a flash drive containing the original chapters of My Immortal, dating back to their original posting dates. The internet was in awe. Not only had the author of My Immortal been found, the genesis of My Immortal was revealed to have been a heartwarming story of a lost and drifting teenage girl trying to find her brother. Interest in Christo's upcoming memoir surged. To many in the fandom, this was the best way the hunt for Tara Gillespie could have ended. But sadly, it hadn't ended. The other shoe dropped soon enough. A person claiming to be Rose Christo's brother posted on the infamously anarchic Kiwi Farms online forum, allegedly verified to be her brother by the moderators of Kiwi Farms. He rejected almost all of Christo's claims about her childhood. She wasn't Native American, she hadn't been in foster care, her real name wasn't even Rose Christo, and her real ancestry was Greek. Fans were divided over whether to believe him, but it became more likely than not that he was right and Christo was wrong when Macmillan, the publisher of Rose Christo's memoir, announced they would be canceling the book's highly awaited release because their lawyers had found factual inaccuracies in the story. Publicly, Christo said that she had changed a few things in her memoir to protect her family's confidentiality, but maintained that it was mostly true. But at the same time, she tweeted out a long and angry thread to her brother that seemed to confirm many of the things he had said on Kiwi Farms. She had intended for the thread to be just between her and her brother, but she accidentally made it public. Rose Christo's house of cards had come crashing down. She admitted to faking most of her memoir, but insisted that she really had written My Immortal. It's worth noting that this is the only detail of her life her brother said he didn't have enough evidence to deny, and he did confirm that she went by Tara as a teenager. That's where things stood on the status of My Immortal in 2022, when I last updated this script. I had to dig up this old script on short notice, and I don't know if there are updates since then. I don't think there are. Tara and Raven Acidbath still say they didn't write it, but the number of coincidences pointing their way have made some people disbelieve them. Rose Christo still says she did write it, but is known to have lied about almost everything else. In other words, we have no more leads than we did on the day My Immortal was finished. Probably fewer, in fact. We've unearthed enough weirdos in the search to serve as villains for a whole season of Adam West's Batman, but none of them carry a smoking gun. Who do I think wrote My Immortal? I don't know. And I don't want to know. But I don't think it's any of the main suspects, nor is it Lanny Sarah. I have massive respect for the true author, assuming it's not Rose Christo, for having stayed tight-lipped about it for all these years, even as her creation has become one of the biggest cultural phenomena ever to darken fanfiction's doorway. The real Tara Gillespie is an anti-celebrity, seeking no fame and no fortune, even after having sent out a story into the world that touched the lives of millions. So many people I know have a story of when they were first introduced to My Immortal by a friend or classmate at some point, and then another story of when they first introduced someone else, another friend, a sibling perhaps, passing on the experience of having read the terrifically awful tale of Enaby, Darkness, Dementia, Raven Way for the first time. I hope the person once known on the internet as Tara Gillespie is somewhere comfortable, sipping a glass of wine, watching all this drama go down with a smirk on her lips, fully aware of her contribution to the modern-day folklore that is fanfiction.